right. Welcome back to the Catalyst Pharmacy Podcast. Today we have Bob Lominick on. He's the owner and pharmacist of Tyson Drugs in Holly Springs, Mississippi. Obviously, he has a whole episode that we've done on MedSync. So we get into a little bit of that, how he uses MedSync to really power all of these other things. And he talks about how he leverages community healthcare workers, what that certification is and what it really means, what clinical services he's layering on, how he incorporates it into his really powerful and efficient MedSync operation that he has. And that's either just from like the normal stuff like outcomes and tips, but also like he's got some direct payer relationships through CPSN and how he layers those in as well. Also, we gush about it, but talking about CPSN and all the resources in the network available around that, what they're doing, I think he kind of drops a little bit of a scoop around, hey, look, they're doing something new with data. And some insights that they're gleaming from it that seems to be super useful. Be sure to watch the whole thing. It's got a lot of good stuff in it. All those topics are super relevant right now. If you're done and you like it, just make sure you give us a thumbs up, a like, a subscribe. All that standard stuff really helps us with the algos, helps us reach people. Appreciate it. We'll take you there now. Thanks. All right. Well, everybody, Bob Lominick is back on the podcast. Appreciate you having you back. Really appreciate your time today. Bob is the pharmacist and owner of Tyson Drugs, multi-store owner. He's a lead luminary for CPSN Mississippi. Also the 2023 Luminary of the Year with CPSN, doing a lot of work there. Kind of known in the world as the godfather of MedSync. And you work with kind of your alum as well. I think you're it's technically faculty. With Ole Miss, and I know you're kind of a rotation spot for probably, I don't know if hundreds of pharmacists yet, but probably getting close to that.
I would say so, yeah.
But yeah, so welcome back, Bob. Appreciate you being on.
Thank you. Good to be here.
All right, man. So I think you need no introduction for the most part, but I do think I want to highlight for folks who maybe haven't, I don't know, listened to the podcast before, or maybe they're just hearing you for the first time, which is probably impossible, but here we are. I want to like sprinkle in the foundation of kind of what I think is part of like a part of what you do at the pharmacy, which is MedSync. I think like we could start there, and then I want to get into the clinical services you guys are tapping into, what you're doing with CPSN, and the new stuff that's happening there. There's something really cool that just happened with Medicaid Ohio. We'll talk about that too. And then after that, like some of the, I think, community health worker stuff you guys are embracing and things like that. So that's kind of like a little bit of an intro, everybody, of everything's going to be touched on today, plus just thoughts from Bob on what's important this year. But could you explain a little bit of like your philosophy and how you approach your work in your pharmacy with kind of the lens around like, hey, we think MedSync's hyper important. And this is kind of how we use it to leverage everything else we do.
Yeah, I'll be glad to. And as you know, and probably a lot of the listeners that know me, I've been preaching MedSync for a long time, over a decade.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, and I'm going to be pretty strong about this, for the life of me, I do not understand why every community pharmacy does not embrace MedSync. My last podcast, I told the story. I won't bore everyone with it again, but I got into it for selfish reasons over a decade ago. I wanted my life to be easier, and it does that.
Yeah, that's a good reason to do it. Absolutely.
I mean, it is a game changer for your workflow. I mean, we are at 85% of our prescriptions are being done through MedSync, so we know every day what we're going to do. About everything that we're going to do each day when we walk in. So it absolutely changes the culture. The dynamics of the workflow in the pharmacy. We actually train other pharmacists to do MedSync, and they'll come and spend the day here, and then we follow up with them. But 100% of the visitors that come in and they're in the pharmacy, they stand there and they go, wow, how many prescriptions are you filling? In this particular pharmacy, we're filling, you know, about 800 a day, but the phone doesn't ring. They would be in the pharmacy 15 minutes. They said the phone has not rang one time since we've been here. That tells the story. That tells the story of MedSync. So my preaching now is not how to do MedSync, but what you can do with MedSync. What are the results? MedSync is just a tool that opens the doors to do so many things. It gives you time. That's the biggest takeaway from MedSync is it gives you time. And, you know, we're going to talk about CPSN, but a lot of pharmacy owners, even when I used to talk about MedSync a lot, they say, why are you telling me to do other things? I don't have time to do what I need to be doing
what
now.
I'm doing now, right? Yeah,
but they don't get it. You know, they it's like any other thing. You got to put a little time into it, but it's the best tool in your arsenal, and it costs nothing.
Right. Okay. And if anything, it makes you just like cash flow more efficient too. All of those things, right? Like
I could talk on MedSync and the advantages of it for several hours. It's cash flow, it's inventory, it's workflow, it's culture in your pharmacy. Everybody's happy and not mad all day long.
Quality of life at work. Yeah, totally.
Quality of life is the biggest thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I will say this. We won't harp on it too much because I know everyone could go back and listen to the other episode, but I will say this. If you've ever walked into Bob's store, and Bob, you've had a lot of people walk into your stores or Tyson Drugs. I got to do that a few years ago again. And it's just eerily like not in a like a library way, but just eerily quiet that you think and you walk in and people are smiling at you going, hey, you know, or just it's like no one's just like frantically, you know, sure, you're going to have acute meds and things like that. And people like there was a waiter there. But everybody was just so like I kind of walk in with my lunch pail and I know what I'm doing today. Which is really
and, you
cool.
know, and I'll carry that a little bit further. And I talked to my students about this. I don't know why in the world that decades ago, when we designed pharmacies, that we designed it so the patients, when they walk in, see all that chaos.
Oh, yeah.
Why do they have to see it? You know,
that's fair.
Why can't? Yeah. And I talk about my vision of a perfect pharmacy is when you walk in, you go into baby cubicles. Mm-hmm. And a pharmacist and a tech greets you in that cubicle, and you sit down and you talk to them. While you're talking to them, the tech could be entering the prescriptions, and it goes behind this magic wall back here.
Right.
And you got a crew back here that's frantic and working, and then they bring it out. But anyway, I could talk about that, but I don't know why in the world we designed pharmacy to where everyone that walks in, it's just chaos back there.
Yeah.
You know? It's almost scary.
You're right. That's fair. All right. Well, cool. Let's talk through, like, I think everyone, like we harp on that a lot here. So again, go back, watch the episode. It's great. And Bob's also got classes too, I think, or at least training he does. Don't you do that as well? Yep. Like it's on your website. I believe.
Website.
We'll throw it in the show links. So like if, I know like for at one point, Bob is always graciously to host folks, but also like it's gotten to the point where everyone's trying to learn it so much. So he's a little bit of a model now to do it in a more structured way. So that's
exactly what happened. I'll be honest. When I used to speak at trade shows, people would say, hey, can I come by your pharmacy and see what you're doing? Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, it became overwhelming.
Yeah.
You know, and my staff, especially my leadership team said, Bob, you got to stop there. As you said, we got to put some structure to this.
Yeah.
So we do, and we host people, and we do follow up with them. So it's all on the website.
Yep. We'll throw it in the show notes. So let's talk through like okay. So let's talk into the I'll call it higher value stuff. Like that MedSync's really valuable, but it's a great efficient way to group and create an engine to do the like efficiently lower value work a little bit, so that you can get to the higher value stuff with the conversation with the patients and interactions. That lead to clinical services or things like that. So what are you layering on? How did you even think through what to approach to layer on first? And that's probably different for everybody, but what were your thoughts on it?
So when we first started MedSync and it was, we didn't have a roadmap to follow pharmacies do now. And quite honestly, I think, I know that Pioneers, I plug you guys. Your SYNC model is the best out there. And believe me, we've looked at all of them.
We've had a lot of great people to help us with that.
And I'll be honest, Jeff spent a week here when I was started SYNC. And quite honestly, I think your SYNC, Pioneer SYNC model is designed after my pharmacy. And I love to talk about that.
A lot of it is. A lot of it is. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, it is. And I've been happy and grateful to help with that. So, but anyway, once I started MedSync and got through the speed bumps that it was so frustrating, and I talk about this in another podcast, is so many times I wanted to throw in the towel and say, this is not worth it. But I didn't want to go back to where I was. I didn't know whether I was going the right direction, but I didn't want to go back there.
Right.
So I kept working it, and it was frustrating. It's frustrating. But then when I got, I don't remember how many patients, 100, 150 patients, we began to see the results. It was a little bit more calm in the store. Phones weren't ringing as much. And then we were when we would call these patients, and we call them a week in advance, we would talk about their medications. And we would ask them to count their maintenance medications, see how many they had left. Oh. Why I did this, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know why I did it. But what I realized, because the counts more often than not were not correct.
Oh, okay.
So I went, whoa. What I discovered was we have a big adherence problem.
Okay.
Patients are not taking their medications as they should. So that was my first focus, is we've got to make certain these patients are taking their medications correctly. Be quite honest, people would get very defensive.
I imagine.
You know, say, Miss Jones, you know, you should only have a half a dozen lisinopril. You tell me you got 12. Are you taking them every day? And they would say, well, of course I'm taking. I know what I'm doing. I've been doing this for years. Well, we've got the numbers.
Yeah.
It doesn't add up.
Right.
So we had to figure out a way to improve adherence. And we worked on it. I won't bore you with all the details, but we got compliance packaging,
right.
Which is a...
Y'all have a Right Way. I think it's called Right Way Meds or
yep,
something like
yep.
that.
Program. Well, we've actually incorporated under Tyson umbrella now, but mm-hmm. Right Way Meds is what... It was completely separate from a regular pharmacy. And why I did that, I don't know, but it sure turned out to be the right thing to do, completely separate those two packaging models, if
right.
you will. So we've got, I don't know, 700 or 800 patients in that model alone now.
Okay. Wow.
So anyway, that is adherence on steroids, as I call it. So that was my first endeavor after MedSync, is focusing on medication adherence. And we still focus on that. I mean, we really do everything we can to make certain patients take their medications correctly. And today's environment, we've actually shipped a few patients off to other pharmacies because they absolutely would not become adherent, and it cost us money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were redeemed. So that was my first move, I guess, is to really improve on adherence.
Got it. So you were looking at this of going, look, I've got star measures, I've got all of these other, like, I'll just say financial implications as well, as long as mm-hmm. patient health and outcomes to go, that's why I'm jumping in. I'm not even thinking about right now, like, how about all of the other things that you've built upon it now, but like that's far as like idea number one, that was like, this is where we got to go because of that. That's interesting. You talked about too just now about like, hey, you've had them completely separate. I would imagine with that, I'll just call it the compliant packaging side and keeping that as separate as you did. Imagine that helped them figure it out faster though. If you're not inundated with the other half of the business, I imagine there's an advantage to that of actually being able to go, hey, crew, all you do is think about this and how to make this good.
That's absolutely correct.
Somebody coming in with the antibiotics that needs them right now.
That's right. That's exactly. And I happen to have the space, and it can be done in a back room. It can be done. But I would strongly recommend keeping it separate. I cannot imagine trying to focus on the packaging while you're in the middle of the hustle and bustle of a traditional pharmacy. I just can't imagine how chaotic that would be. As a matter of fact, when we teach other pharmacy owners, the person who's doing the calling, I tell them to get them as far away from the pharmacy bench as possible.
Okay.
Put them in another office.
Yep.
We actually have them upstairs above the pharmacy. We used to have a little office beside the pharmacy, which is where I started them. Mm-hmm. And what happens when the pharmacy would get busy? They'd pull a sink collar out to help them get caught up.
Yep.
So I kept moving her further away. And then finally I put her upstairs, and the efficiency went through the roof.
Okay.
The productivity. So we now have them hidden away in offices so they can't be disturbed.
Got it. That makes total sense. Okay. I guess from there, let's talk through a little bit about like, some of the clinical services you guys layer on then from there, because I think, again, you can go back and watch the other podcast. It talks about the staff model, like their journey of what, how to get everybody on board. All of that stuff is all in that other podcast. So go watch it. If you're still kind of like tiptoeing into MedSync, it's one of the best. We'll put that in the show notes as well, so that it's super easy to get to, so that everyone can kind of like hear the journey of getting a really like large, high efficiency MedSync model done from a staff perspective and everything.
So closing out on a MedSync pitch, you know, if you're not doing it, get into it. Just dive into it. If you're just, you know, dipping your toe in it, as you said, you need to jump in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a game changer. A little bit challenging at first.
Yeah.
I won't, you know, anything is, But, buddy, the rewards later on are so worth it. As quality of life, you mentioned that. That's the one thing. Back when I was fighting.
Imagine going home at 6, 5:30.
Yes. Right. Yes, and your family enjoys you coming through the door instead of running to the other end of the house because you're so irritable, you know. So I told somebody I didn't realize my family didn't like me till I until I changed my workflow model.
Right. Okay, cool. Good. That's there. It's a great listen. Go see it. The other thing too, let's talk through some of the clinical services you guys are layering on. I know you're working with CPSN. We'll probably weave all of this stuff in together. This kind of next segment, I guess we call it, of like you guys are embracing, I believe it's called community healthcare workers. Layer on so many clinical services, plus your work on CPSN nationally, plus regionally there in Mississippi too. So I'll let you start where you want to start with that.
Wow. You know, my vision years ago was how do we better take care of patients and dispense? How do we blend this in? Mm-hmm. You know, at BedSync, as I said, gives you the time to do that. So, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago, the pharmacy school at Ole Miss approached me about a residency program. Well, it scared me to death. You know, that was I'm still kind of old school, and I was afraid of that. I didn't quite know what that would look like, and I'm very close to the pharmacy school physically. We're only 20 minutes away,
right?
And I said, guys, I'll do this, but you got to hold my hand. And so they did. They hired. I don't remember. You remember Dr. Jordan Ballou?
Of course, I remember. I was going to ask you how you're doing.
Well, she's in South Carolina now. Yeah. She moved up to the University of South Carolina and doing a wonderful job. We miss her desperately, but they. Lindsay Miller is with us now, and she's doing it. She those were big shoes to fill, but she's doing a super job.
That's good.
But anyway, I brought on a resident, and I didn't know how to blend that clinical services in with a dispensing pharmacy. I didn't know enough about the clinical side to know how to do it. I knew how to, because of MedSync, I knew how to control workflow, and I'd learned that, and I had that really going good, but now I needed to work on the clinical stuff.
Okay.
So the 3 months of getting my first resident, I said, this is the answer. They are so sharp in knowing how to take care of patients.
Right.
So we worked together and created the appointment-based model. It's one of the first things we did. We talked about that for decades, appointment-based model. And how it came about was COVID.
Okay.
We started doing COVID vaccines, and we had done the flu vaccines for years, like a typical pharmacy. Two days during flu season, we'd pitch a tent outside on the side of the road and say, okay, from 10 to 2, and we'd have 200 people there and trying to, so we created a, and it's on our website as well, you can go in and schedule vaccines now. So we started scheduling COVID vaccines.
Okay.
And they could go online and schedule, do all the paperwork, and then we schedule, I think, 4 every 15 minutes.
Okay.
And it was a game changer. And so we, after COVID and even now, we do a lot of things on an appointment-based model. It has opened up the door for us to be a vaccine destination center. The health department's 2 blocks from here, but they're sending all the people up here to us to get their vaccine.
Okay. So
because of the ease, and even during COVID, when people were lined up at National Guard armories, for miles getting the COVID vaccines, we had them walking through our door, every 15 minutes we had 4 or 5 people, and word spread. So this little community is only like 7,000 people, but we did over, I think, like 8,500 COVID vaccines.
Oh, wow.
So it gave us the opportunity to do things differently and do things better.
Okay.
So with clinical services, that was our first move, is realizing on the COVID vaccines, and we that was a nice windfall that we took advantage of because we had a clinical person that could put some structure to it.
Right. Talk about like appointment based model. Talk about again another like predictable thing you can plan for, and staff efficiently, so you're not like just bleeding labor hours for no reason. That's huge. The appointment-based model. When I've seen folks implement it. Scott, I think Scott was just on, Scott Pace was just on a couple podcasts ago, I think, talking about the same thing. You know, he's like, it just helps you just plan accordingly. And you got a lot of section of your people who like to have a preset time. You know, you got some people that work 12 hours a day too, that kind of just like need to walk in sometimes, and you help those when you can. But like, man, if you can create a model that makes sense like that, you can staff it efficiently.
That's right. It's not just limited to vaccines, you know, with doing CMRs and tips and app, you know, and outcomes and completing all the tips. So our sync callers, you know, I could talk for hours about all this.
No, that's okay. I think that's the extra stuff we want to.
That call, when we get those tips, those opportunities through outcomes, we tag our patients. So when the sync callers call them, they let them know. They can usually handle the tip on the call, but if it's a CMR they need, they go in a scheduler and schedule an appointment to come in and get the CMR.
Oh, that's great.
And pick their medicine
and
up at the same time.
Yeah.
Then the pharmacist, every day they do a printout of who's coming in that day. Or if we're short on pharmacists and we know it a day or two in advance, we just don't open up any appointments.
Mm, okay.
So it's very controllable. And like you said, it's predictable. If we have a full staff, first thing they do when they walk in is they print out the schedule for the appointment-based models, who's coming in for vaccines, who's coming in for CMRs, and they can plan their day accordingly.
Right, right. That's great. So you guys are already leveraging Sync in order to get those tips done, get the CMRs done, schedule CMRs in person to time those when they're picking them up. That's huge. Okay.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
All right.
And you can do anything like that. Any service you want to provide, you weave it into, and you're right, it starts with MedSync.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Good. All right, let's talk through, talk to me a little bit about community health worker, a little bit about that.
So my buddy Trip Logan up in Missouri.
Yeah. He was the first person that probably introduced that term on this podcast at all, so.
Yep. Well, Trip and I, we go way back. We're both big St. Louis Cardinals baseball fans, and well, I know he and his family used to get season tickets, and I'd mooch off of him every now and then and go up and steal his tickets. But he introduced this to me years ago, and it got my attention.
Okay.
And he actually started working with his local health department, which getting ahead of myself. CPSN Mississippi, we're really working closely now with our local health department because of the advice that Tripp gave us.
Right.
So he discovered this community health worker. I don't say he discovered it. He was one of the first ones, if not the first, to blend it in with his pharmacy.
Yeah,
practices.
Really embrace it and then weave it in. Yeah.
And it opens up so many doors. So I reached out to Mississippi about community health workers, and they do have a organized training program through the health department, and we are working closely with them, hoping to help develop that training program. And we're encouraging each of our CPSN members to get a community health worker on board. Now, what is a community health worker?
Yeah, let's do that too. Let's kind of clear up what it is, what they do, what they help with in a pharmacy too. I think that's kind of what is it? What do they do?
So, right now, they're in Mississippi. I don't know about other states, but there's no direct payment model for community health workers. So Pharmacy Techs makes a great fit. We're already doing community health workers.
You kind of already jobs. Are one. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So what is a community health worker? So what we do, our community health workers, is they go through the training and learn about what resources are available in your community.
Okay.
Whether it be Meals on Wheels, transportation, whatever communities, educational programs, diabetes programs, whatever resources are available. And then being in the pharmacy, especially doing MedSync and communicating with 3,000 patients a month in my community, we find out what their needs are.
Okay.
And a community health worker is trained to put resources to those needs.
Right.
And I'll give you some quick examples. Yeah. And it gets deeper than a Trip, because of his experience. community health workers, and he's got, I think, six in his pharmacy now. It opens up a lot of doors, grant funding and different projects and stuff. But to keep it simple, let's say, and this actually happened, we had a local pharmacy owner, I think he's from up North Carolina, I forget which one it is, told a story about he was best friends with a hospital administrator.
Okay.
And they just, you know, casual conversation, "Do you know patient John Doe?" And so, "Well, yeah, we provide his medications." And he said, "Why?" And he said, "Man, he's costing us a lot of money at the hospital. He's a dialysis patient, and he keeps being admitted to the hospital."
He's not adherent with whatever that remedy is, right?
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, they get penalized.
Yeah,
because he keeps coming back.
Sure.
And a pharmacy owner said, "I don't know what's going on. Let me check into it." Well, they do deliver the medication to the guy, but the way I understood it is when they pulled into his driveway, there was a limb that had fallen that would not allow the dialysis van to get into his house to pick him up.
Oh gosh, something so
simple as that.
Yeah.
So the delivery driver gets back and said, "Well, I see what's going on," because the pharmacy owner had said, "See what's going on with John when he delivers medicine." Said the van, he talked to him, the van can't get in there.
Okay. Oh, man, yeah.
So what did pharmacy owner do? He was a guy that had a chainsaw.
Probably has a chainsaw, I imagine.
He did. He went and got rid of the limb, and the problem solved.
Sounds like most of the owners I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Another example of the little lady who, during the winter, debris had blown up on her front steps, and she could not get down the steps to go to her mailbox, to go to the grocery store. The pharmacy delivery guy, you know, knew she had trouble getting down. So he got back, and the community health worker knew of a men's club at a church close to her, and they called the men's club, and the men's club went out and cleaned her porch off. Now, health-wise, it gets deeper than that. Why is our patient not getting their medication? Can they not afford the copay? Do they not have a way to the pharmacy? So relating to pharmacy matters, community health workers play a very important role. I've got one on staff now. One of her patients, the only way she could heat her food was with a microwave oven, and her microwave oven broke, and she was upset.
Sure.
when my community health worker called her, who was also my sink caller, and so she reached out to her resources, and somebody donated a microwave oven, and we carried it out and hooked it up for her.
Oh, okay, so I'll try to distill it a little bit. So this isn't an official interpretation by any means, but look at a community health worker, for those folks who probably are still trying to figure out how this fits, is someone who's probably the most educated person in the pharmacy around the resources available to enable outcomes in some way.
Exactly.
And that could be programs for diabetes or something like that, but it also could be access solutions like, hey, transportation and things like that. So it's someone who's educated on all of the resources around positive outcomes for the patient.
Yeah, we're in Mississippi. We lead the nation in terrible things, diabetes being big thing we lead the nation in. And so there's diabetes education programs. So when we talk to our diabetic patients, our community health worker does, what does she do? She tries to hook them up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's right. It's putting resources and connecting them with the needs.
Right.
Tripp, I love to quote him. The first community health worker we had was one of his techs who had been in his store forever.
Oh.
And she was already accustomed to talking to clinics as a tech. But he said when she got her certificate for community health worker, she told the clinic, said, "Hey, I'm a community health worker." It changed the whole level of conversation.
That's interesting.
Carried it to another level.
Okay. Okay, yeah. So that's kind of a term recognized then in those spheres when you're having conversations, whether it be your local Department of Health or some type of clinic or providers. Hey, not only am I the pharmacy tech that does this, but I'm also a community health worker. So I totally can see they probably look at that person or that pharmacy in a different lens after that.
That's exactly right. So again, putting needs to resources and I was shocked at the amount of resources that are out there that we weren't even aware of.
Right.
And that's what a community health worker does.
Okay. Okay, cool. So brace that in the pharmacy. But also think through, okay, cool. There's not a payment model yet for Mississippi for certain services. And you're right. I do think you're right about that, Bob. You're already 80% of the way 80% of the way there, you're just not certified as most pharmacy exactly. techs are, especially if you're a super tech in the pharmacy yep. in some way.
You're already helping people.
You're already doing it. You just maybe don't have the resource knowledge yet that's available out there. That's cool. But there's also like seriously, like from a financial model support perspective, you go from someone not filling medications to filling medications now. Like it not trying to like be about the dollar or the margin per se, but it takes a margin to make a model.
It's real.
It really yep. does. It's real. And so like, if you think through why would you do this? How does this type of certification fund itself? Well, that's how.
Well, and as you know, the big buzzword nationwide now is social determinants of health.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we just talked about. Mm-hmm. Social determinants of health. What is socially affecting people to where they can't get the health care needs that they're entitled to?
Right.
So, and that's what a community health worker does, is puts that together, which again, getting back to Tripp, it opened up so many doors, so many service structures are looking for people to say, hey, this is what we do. Can you help us, you know, direct patients to what we do? So it opens up a lot of doors.
Yeah. Could you imagine Tripp's got such a great advantage in his market over, I'll just say, bigger box stores, or something like that. When you're talking to local departments of health and you go like, half my techs that work in the MedSeq world that are really handling the most complex patients are all community health worker certified as well. Yep. Like you're right. It just lends so much credibility probably to the pharmacy itself.
I'm
going to do it. So, cool.
It's exciting.
Good. All right. So let's talk through a little bit, CPSN wise. Something I saw that was cool that I don't know if you're involved with or not, but it's really in Ohio, Humana, hats off to Humana actually for this, is going to pay pharmacies for submitting for E&M codes basically, on top of, you know, for the complex patients really. And I think just something that just came out like 2 months ago, or not 2 months ago, 2 days ago around, CMS payment rates. And also like, hey, look, folks are seeing a higher percentage of inpatient hospitalizations. And so I'm just trying to think through like with all of that to me is a recipe for pharmacy to go, hey, remember, we can help. We just did that in COVID. Like, you know, keep someone out of the hospital. Or at least like just like your story with the guy with the dialysis patient. Like leverage us to do that and give us a financial model. Obviously we got to have a financial model to do it. But talk through a little bit about what your involvement with and CPSN. I know you guys are always doing a lot of cool stuff.
So CPSN, I was, you know, actually several years ago when Community Network of North Carolina, CNCC.
Yeah.
Remember, they got the big grant from Medicare.
$15 million
bucks or something. Well, Troy Trigstad, CEO of CPSN, invited me as well as some other pharmacy owners from different states to that program where they announced the big grant.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know why I was invited. And that was the purpose of him getting pharmacy owners from across the nation was the creation of CPSN.
Mm-hmm.
With that announcement, we started CPSN. So what does CPSN is? Community Pharmacy Enhanced Service Network. It's high-performing pharmacies that are looking to get paid, and we are doing it differently outside of that PBM model.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Outside of them, you know, we won't get into that. taking our money that we work so hard for.
Yes.
We get it out of that silo. And what does that mean? You mentioned United Healthcare. We've had contracts across the nation, Mississippi being one of them, with United Healthcare to pay us to do clinical services like hemoglobin A1Cs, mm-hmm. blood pressure checks.
Right.
We just had a pilot where we did those two things. If one of our patients, which they're identified by, I'm going to use United Healthcare, by the payer, they send us a list of patients. They know where they're getting the prescriptions and saying, hey, these diabetic patients that are United Healthcare members, and I hate to keep mentioning them, but there are other payers that are doing the same thing.
Sure.
So we're providing Tyson drugs with a list of patients that we have that have not gotten their hemoglobin A1C timely, and we'll pay you to get them in to do it.
Okay. Well,
we've got a relationship with those. During that pilot, within the first day, we had like seven or eight patients walk in to get a hemoglobin A1C simply because their sink caller, who's familiar with them, they have a relationship with them, they call them and said, hey, you need to come in. Bob needs to get some blood work done.
Yep, yep.
So they're paying us directly outside of that model. Now, outside of the PBM model. What's interesting is now we're in our seventh year, I think, with CPSN, maybe eighth, I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe all longer.
All of a sudden, guess who's knocking on our door?
Medicaid?
The PBMs.
The PBMs. Oh, got it.
PSAOs.
Yeah.
They're saying, what are you doing here? You're disrupting it. That's exactly what we want
to
do.
That's fair.
We disrupted
the
payment model.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, it's scary when we say we're talking to PBMs, but we're doing it our way. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about it, the PBMs work for the payer.
Yep.
So what was happening, we were developing these payer programs, clinical services with CPSN, but the PBM controlled our reimbursement for the prescriptions and controlled it so much that some plans we wouldn't take.
Right.
So the patients that we had contracts with, the payers we had contracts with, those patients weren't going to CPSN pharmacies.
Mm.
So then the payer goes to the PBM and says, what the heck's going on here?
Yeah.
Yeah, because we tell them they're not paying us enough.
Right.
They're paying us. We're losing money with those patients.
There's no model to support these patients. They're just not.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So we got a great clinical model that'll keep them healthy, but the patients can't come to our pharmacy because reimbursement sucks so bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But guess what? We're having some success stories.
That's good.
We're getting, you know, contract talks about paying us differently.
That's interesting.
In the CPSN.
That's good. That's a reason to be a part of it. I think you've probably heard a million reasons already by this point of the podcast. But man, that's talk about another great reason to be a part of something infecting change from not just your standard like PBM negotiations. You're like, hey, look, I'm incorporating the payer. That's
bundle.
Either driving direct reimbursement relationships or conversations. That are
bundled services, we're calling it.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Dude, that's exciting. All right.
Well, you know, you folks watching here, you can see, but looking at me, I'm not a young lad. I've seen a lot of changes.
You got more hair than me.
well, it's not the same color it used to be. But anyway, I've seen a lot of things in my career in pharmacy, and I'm more excited about CPSN as I have been anything.
Yeah.
Because we're actually able to create a playing field so these students, when they graduate from pharmacy school, they can use what they're being taught, and that's to how to take care of patients.
Right.
So I went to our board of pharmacy not long ago and made a comment that pharmacy schools are teaching students how to take care of patients. They're not teaching them how to count by five faster.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's
true. We got to create a playing field. We got to allow these students to take care of patients. So.
Right.
That's what you mentioned, students. I do have a lot of students come through here. That's what I preach. You know, we want you to use your education when you get out.
Yeah, a lot of folks are Tyson drug alums out in the world. You probably know a few. I know I do. Okay, cool. So I think that's anything else you want to like add to that around anything I'm missing around the CPSN stuff that you're doing. Anything that I was going to move to, kind of what's important to Bob this year in the pharmacy. Itself.
Of course, CPSN has several branches that, you know, we know everyone's not interested in the same thing.
Sure. Yeah.
So do you have pharmacies interested in pharmacogenomics?
Mm-hmm.
There's a branch for CPSN for that.
There's the village we're doing stuff too. Sorry, go ahead.
Long-term care at home.
Yeah.
What the heck does that mean? A lot of us are getting older.
Mm-hmm.
They're predicting by the 2030 that the Medicare population is going to quadruple. Well, the system can't handle it right now.
Right.
I don't want to go to a nursing home. I know I'm not far from it, but I don't want to do that. So we've got to take care of people better at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't go into all the details, but there's a network.
Yeah.
Long-term care at home.
Right.
And it, we're going to be able to take care of the patients at home and get paid for it.
Right.
Okay. Health equity, I touched on that with social determinants of health.
SDOH.
There's a branch called health. Yeah, social determinants of health. Gosh, what else? Business intelligence, that's so critical these days. The data, I go back to the old PDS days, and Dan Benamo was saying the data in your system is the most valuable thing you have.
That's cold.
CPSN now is analyzing our data. I'm on a beta test with them, and it's amazing what they're going to find out.
That's cool.
And in a nutshell, what they're going to say is they're going to analyze your data and say, you've got this group of patients that are perfect fit for long-term care at home.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay. So kind of like no more having to try and shine the kind of little bit of like, hey, look, you don't have to shine the flashlight on your own data as much. Like, let us help you with that. And we'll give
That's
you a
exactly
direction
what,
start. That's cool.
Because we found out that pharmacy owners are busy. They don't have time or the knowledge to run those reports. I certainly don't.
Right.
But you can download my stuff to the business intelligent folks at CPSN. They're going to analyze it for us. It's really cool. And you're going to be hearing that really shortly from CPSN.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. I think that's a scoop. It's a little bit of a scoop here.
It is a scoop. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Got my first scoop, I think. Yeah. Okay. Anything else before we move out of that? I know there was the provider piece too, I think. I don't know if we talked about that. I don't know if I was coming. I was on my list, I think, to talk about.
Provider status?
Yeah.
Mississippi does not have provider status yet.
Right. Yet. Strong yet.
It. Yeah. We tend to kind of lag behind and I didn't want to get on this, but being involved at the national level with CPSN and NCPA, mm-hmm. I see a lot of cool things that people across the nation are doing, really cool things. I get excited and I try to bring them back home. And my state board says, nope, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to beat it to death too much, but provider status is obviously it's a hot topic across the nation and so many states are doing it. And,
right.
We'll eventually get there.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. All right, let's move to in the four walls real quick, back into the four walls of Tyson Drugs a little bit. What are you, what I've been trying to do with everyone on the podcast the first half of the year is like, hey, is it fundamentals? Like, what's important to you that you're kind of refocused on? I know we've had I'll just say everyone's kind of going through it kind of the middle of the hard part maybe right now or towards the end of it with the DRR fee piece with CVS and like kind of that will be hopefully all done here in the next 6 weeks or so. But like what's important to Tyson Drugs? What's Tyson Drugs focused on this kind of first half of the year going in to make sure you're trying to have a good 24?
So exactly what you talked about, we're absolutely laser focused on those patients that greatly affect our reimbursements.
Okay.
And how we can get the bonus. Humana, for example.
Yeah, they've got a bonus network. Right.
They've got a bonus network. So guess what we're doing? We're identifying every Humana patient in that particular plan, and our seat callers are in tune. We've trained them. When they call those patients, they had better get their medication. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They've got to get their medication, and we emphasize, we tell them the whys,
mm-hmm.
and we're just focusing on it, and we're actually, those who are hurting us, we're actually going to move them somewhere else. We want to get that big rebate or whatever you want to call it, bonus payment, they're mm-hmm. calling it. I don't know how you take money from it and give it back and call it a bonus, but anyway,
I think Jeff does that to me. I'm kidding. Okay.
Yeah. We are really focusing on individual patients and how they affect our pharmacy. How do we have time to do that? MedSync. Okay?
Yeah.
So, we've got Weston, who's my operations manager. We will identify patients. We will tag them in our dispensing system. So when our dispensing technicians, mm-hmm. that patient pops up, they handle them differently.
Okay. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's the big focus for this year that we're focusing on. Plus, obviously, going forward with clinical services with CPSN, we got a pharmacist that does nothing but clinical services. He was embedded in five different clinics doing the annual wellness visits, the RPM, the CCM.
Right. Okay.
So we now have an entry on our P&L for clinical services.
That's great.
The revenue.
It's a great category to have in the pharmacy. Oh my gosh.
The revenue has gotten so big that we created.
Nice.
We're tracking it. We created a different entry in our P&L. So what does that do? All of that revenue that's not subject to, well, clawbacks no more, but DR fees and low reimbursement.
BER still, those all still exist too.
So we're still measuring gross profit and net profit per prescription, but guess what? We'll move that number up is increasing clinical services revenue.
Yeah, and the margin on that's higher typically.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
that's their higher value activity for sure. So
we were actually in some clinics where we were doing remote patient monitoring and chronic care monitoring RPM and CCM
mm-hmm.
For patients who don't even get their medications from us, and we were you know, makes netting sense. $100-$125 a month for those patients, and right. they never walk through our doors.
Facts. Okay. Good. Good. And helping patients too. It shouldn't be weird that there's a good margin to have good outcomes. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so
another program within CPSN is called. Are you familiar with a podiatrist?
Most people are not. I'm not. Educate, okay. Please.
Well, 2 years ago at the mid-year meeting, Amina spoke about it. A podiatrist is basically a expansion of rehab, physical rehab.
Okay.
If somebody gets hurt or has a knee replacement or something, they have to go through rehab, and your insurance will only pay for a certain number of visits, blah, 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 blah.
All right.
Well, a podiatrist is a person that takes those harder patients to work with. Maybe somebody was in a terrible car accident. They got neurological damage. They got a long healing process. Well, a podiatrist can take them and come up with a plan, a care plan, or as we call it, a game plan for those patients and continue to treat them until they're rehabbed, if you will.
Okay.
Again, we're talking about the older population.
Sure.
They're more and more getting older. Well, what happens when people retire? The only exercise they get is the remote control.
So the PPC, me walking in my car, that's still about it for me.
We're starting much younger, I think. But anyway, the PPC model, podiatrist pharmacist collaboration, this aging population, we want to keep them active.
Okay.
So we'll, you know, if you see a patient walks in with a cane, mm-hmm. having trouble, that's a candidate for PPC.
Okay.
We want to create a plan for them to stay mobile. If it's nothing but standing up and doing leg lifts, or as SWAT with Amina's group said, I wish there was a billing code for watching Wheel of Fortune every night, because that keeps the mind active.
Yeah, fair point. Yeah.
The plan is to keep that patient active and keep those muscles from wasting away.
Right.
So there's payment models for that, and that's what PPC is designed to do, is we work with that podiatrist and we get paid directly, not through another entity.
That's nice.
For keeping that patient
talk
active.
He
comes up with a game plan and we incorporate the game plan.
Right. Yeah, talk about bleeding edge too. Like, man, that's a really cool new frontier there.
Yeah,
to think through.
Everybody that walks in your door that's 65 or older is qualifies, you know, their potential patient.
Okay, cool. Wow. All right. What else? I feel like I just feel like I'm just gonna keep you talking now.
Well, we're working on some stuff, a 340B program.
Okay.
You know, a program to where, you know, those GLPs are such a hot topic.
Yeah.
You know, most pharmacies don't want to fill them because we're losing money.
Yeah.
We're working on an alternative for that. Keep them in our pharmacy. Whatever the hot topics are at the national level in pharmacy, you can rest assured CPSN's on top of it.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. No, those drugs have been making a lot of news, a lot of headline, whether it's compounding or other models to try to get patients what they need. It's a wonder drug. Really is.
Amazing.
Crazy. It's just so a lot about out of reach for some, not appropriate for others probably at times, I'm sure.
Right.
But increase
Mississippi,
access. Yeah.
Leading the nation in obesity. But they can't afford these drugs.
That's fair. Yeah. That's funny. Okay. Not funny, but well, okay, cool. Well, man, I feel like I learned a lot. I didn't know you were doing half the stuff that you were doing from that perspective. Anything you're looking
at? Well, I've only told you half of what we're doing.
That's probably true. It's probably true. Go see his pharmacy. You'll get the other half. But anything you're looking at in 24 in the future, 25, anything you got your eye on that maybe other pharmacies should keep an eye on too, that's, you know, maybe you're thinking about?
You know, one thing that keeps popping up is and we did this years ago and the market kind of died out, is home infusions are apparently getting some attention these days.
I think they're up too when I read it. Like if you go look at some data from like IQVIA, I think those are up in some way.
Yeah. I've been told to do a little research on it, and I plan to do that just to look into that. Of course, it would, we'd have to have the manpower to do it. But anyway, that's something I'm looking at. Another thing I'm looking at is really getting involved with the School of Pharmacy to get students aware of what's happening in the community pharmacy world at a earlier level. You know, these students don't get, you know, they come and do my rotation and they go, whoa, we didn't realize that all of this could be done in a community pharmacy.
Okay.
So we need to increase awareness for students at an earlier level. Community pharmacy is kind of taking a beating in the social media world, if you will. But there's some great opportunities in community pharmacy, and the students don't need to hear the negative. They need to hear the positive. So that's one thing I really want to focus on is working with students. And I got my daughter who's a second year pharmacy student right now.
Really?
So I've got a vested interest in doing that.
You need a model
you
need a model that sustains for sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true. Like I always feel like I'm a bad sample because I only ever deal, if I'm using a pharmacy at all, it's a local community pharmacy. So I'm biased, but you're right. I think there's this lens right now with community. If you want to call some of the bigger chains, community pharmacies as well, people to think that's the only version of it. It's so not, and you're right. I do think if you can get, I guess I use sales a lot. So if you can get up the funnel a little bit with exposure to different models like yourself and other just like local community pharmacies, it's more of they won't make up their mind by year three that they're doing something else. Right.
And I'm trying to work closely with the pharmacy school and creating more residency programs in community pharmacy and trying to encourage other pharmacies and have several. You know, I love our residency program, and they would love to duplicate it. And I'm not bashful, as you know, of sharing what I do. I want other independents to be successful, and I don't mind sharing if I'm doing something. And by the way, these pharmacies that come in and learn from me, I always learn something from them too.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, I always pick up something that I wasn't aware of. So it's really cool sharing. You know, years ago, community pharmacies wouldn't talk to each other. You know, they were so competitive. But now I'll help my neighbor out. You know, I want us all to be successful.
It's clear you got to unite. I mean, you really do. Think about like a network of, I don't know another better network of folks that share ideas across either state lines or neighbors. It doesn't matter CPSN. So I know people are probably tired of me saying it on this podcast. So, but it really is. You talk about like, they even have a program. We had someone on, I think it was Tiffany. I can't remember. Sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm going to butcher that, but even a network for pharmacy techs inside CPSN, which is so cool. Like if you got super techs that you really lean on in your pharmacy that really drive, whatever it is, operations, MedSync, whatever it is, like there's a network of folks that they can tap into to get ideas from as well.
Do we have time for me to tell a quick story about? Okay, I'm so glad you brought up pharmacy techs. We, as pharmacy owners, we don't utilize our techs. I do now. We don't utilize them enough as a general rule. They can be so helpful, and they're looking for things to do. Mm-hmm. Tiffany, you mentioned we work closely with Tiffany through the
Tiffany Caps, I believe, right?
Yeah, Tiffany and Weston and Chelsea, they do the Flip the Pharmacy program. Yes. They do a MedSync program every week. And Tiffany was actually this winter, she came down to visit our store and spent some time with Chelsea and Weston. And,
oh, that's cool. That's right. Yeah. That's right. She talked about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So Weston and Chelsea, my techs, my operations manager, my store back. I mean, they're at a high level in my store, but they're also doing a weekly call with technicians to train them up.
Yeah.
Now, as you know, I was in high demand for years about speaking at different functions on MedSync, to associations, to the trade shows. Well, last spring, NCPA called me and said, will you talk about MedSync at our fall NCPA in Orlando? I said, well, yeah, I'll be glad to do that. Well, Tiffany and Chelsea and Weston were asked to speak on MedSync at all the trade shows, the Cardinal, McKesson, Amerisource. Yeah, they were actually asked to speak from a technician standpoint. Yeah. Well, I've been preaching to store owners for years, and the same rut that they get, I don't have time to do all this. Well, guess what? They were so popular at these trade shows because they were speaking as technicians. And Tiffany even told a story one time. She said, you know why they ask us to speak? Because we're the ones who run the stores. And she's exactly right. And so it was such a hit, and there was such demand. It was overwhelmingly successful. NCPA called me and said, hate to do this, but we'd rather have Tiffany and Weston and Chelsea speak than you.
Sorry, Bob.
I said, fine, I'll pass the baton, because that's who we need to focus on, is getting our technicians involved and not trying to do everything ourselves, which we're all guilty as pharmacy owners of trying to do everything ourselves.
Fair point. I'm glad you harped on that. And you're probably still in high demand speaking, let's be real. But but it's good. The Bob Lominick coaching tree is what it sounds like.
well, again, I don't mind sharing. I'm not the smartest person in the world. I figured out something that made my life easier that had some good side effects.
Right. What is it? And I'm not calling you this, but what is it? I think it's lazy people make the best engineers at times.
I think you're right. Yeah. I wanted something to make my life easier. Right. And I did that.
Right.
And then I discovered all this other stuff that I could do.
Right. Well, that's cool. Well, again, great to have. I got one more segment before we go. Prescribables. Again, I'm going to introduce it a little bit, because what I do is just try to ask everybody, what are you reading, watching, listening to, doing that you think people who watch this or listen to this would want to know about?
Data.
Oh, all right.
I mean, it's there. It's right there at your fingertips. It's absolutely amazing. Again, I'm a beta site with the CPSN project. Mm-hmm. I'm so intrigued at what they're doing and what they're grasping from my system. That's just, again, Dad Benamo said years ago, your data is the most valuable asset you have. Mm-hmm. And that is coming to fruition now. I'm seeing it myself from my locations. So folks, you got to pay attention to your data. You just can't walk in and fill scripts all day, every day, run that report that you're required to run, walk out, look at that report, run different reports, find out those patients that are costing you money. And do something about it. Either improve them or get rid of them. That's where we are. That's where we are in our industry now.
I think so. I hear it all the time from folks that are like, "Hey, look, I've had to, let a contract go because, like, I'm sorry, I can't service you, patient." But I have, and if you're in a state that allows this, I don't know if Mississippi is. If you're in a state that allows an open dialogue with the patient that goes, "Hey, look, I can't fill it for this, but I can put you on the best cash price I can and still try to take care of you." And a lot of times it's the same or better. I think there was a stat me and Josh were talking about the other day that came out there, 80% of cash prices, or 79, I think is the exact number, for generics now, this is just for generics, is equal to or better for the patient from an access, you know, from a dollar's perspective than just using the copay. So that's where we're at to a degree.
You're going to see an emerging direct pay model, we'll call it.
Mm-hmm.
Big tree through CPSN, that's a direct pay clinic that involves pharmacy. So it's going to be more and more cash models. And we are actually doing that, introducing a cash model. You know, you think about people who have insurance now, their deductibles are so high, they're never really using it.
They really are. Dude, really are. Myself included. Yeah. Like, it really is. Like, I'd rather just pay cash and hit the deductible. I just won't. Yeah. We're fortunate to have good insurance especially incentivized to use local pharmacies, but there's a lot of people I know that's like, it's just cheaper to pay cash. There's a generic that's literally would be $18 that I was going over with my grandmother, my mom and my grandmother, that she's paying like $38 for.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, and I know from what I know about this particular agreement, like 18 of that's clawed back, from the, so I'm just like, it's just go pay $20 and be good. It'll be better for them anyway.
Well, I think, and that's, prescribables. That's one thing that we really got to look at is a cash the cash payment model. Who knows what's going to happen with the PBMs. I mean, they're under such scrutiny these days, but there's an advantage. If you run your data, run your reports on your data and see how many people are paying cash. And find, I hear store owners all the time, I don't know what's happening. I'm losing money. I don't have, are you analyzing? They're filling prescriptions. They're losing a lot of money on. They don't need to do that.
Right.
You need to address that situation. So it takes time.
It takes being educated on your contracts too. Like that's an investment. Yes. It really is. I mean, I get any owner going, there's no way to read them all. There's just not.
Well, Pioneer has great reporting features. You can run analysis on every plan there. Yep. And if you're losing money on one, get rid of it.
Yep. There you go. There you go.
All right. Well, wisdom from Bob. You heard it, everybody.
So, all right. Well, Bob, thanks so much for your time. Really, like, I know you're a high-end demand guy. Appreciate you spending any time with us that you can. We'll put how to get a hold of you guys in the show notes as well through your website and stuff. That way it's, you know, kind of coming in from the same place that everybody else is using. So we'll throw all in there. But appreciate your time today, Bob.
Well, I love always talking to Pioneer folks. One thing we didn't talk about is the Beatles, Mark.
Oh, we did. Oh, now we could do, like, let's do a 30-minute segment on that right now. We can.
Yeah,
but
we could.
People who don't know, Bob has seen the Beatles in person. And I got to go to London last, I don't know, a couple of years ago, actually.
I'm
and
so
my wife,
when I
my
saw
very
picture.
Sweet wife, surprised me with, like, this whole tour one day of, like, Beatles spots, which was...
I was so jealous.
Oh, it was so great. I got to go to the Abbey Road stuff, all that stuff. But yeah, love it. I didn't get to go to Liverpool, obviously. She's been to Liverpool, into the cave, I guess, where they played. But I'm a huge, if anybody, like, comes up to me and wants to talk Beatles, I'll talk Beatles to you until you're tired of me.
Let me tell a quick story. I was at, we were at a conference, I guess it was NCPA, and they do the... the Pharmacy Times Next Generation Pharmacist Awards, which I was fortunate enough to win that years ago, so I'm a judge now. And that was a ceremony before NCPA started. I think it was NCPA. And so at this award ceremony, they had some entertainment, and there was this huge, big canvas on rollers that they rolled out, and they had these dancers come out with paint cans. And they started throwing paint on this canvas. They would spin it around and throw it on the backside. And so as the music kept going and as things developed, they kept rotating it around. One side of it, it was a John Lennon's face.
Oh, what?
And the other side, I think, was Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, cool.
So they were just throwing paint, and all of a sudden, there John Lennon appears.
Oh, wow.
Well, Rada was a sponsor of this show. And after it was over, I said, what? What happens to that canvas?
What are you doing with this?
What are you doing with this? Guess where it is now.
Where is it?
I've got it in my pharmacy.
All right. Now I have another reason. Now I got another reason to go to Holly Springs.
There you go. There you go.
All right. That's cool. That's a cool story. That's wild. So anyway, if anybody wants to nerd out with me about Beatles, you can approach Bob or I.
That's right.
And
I've got a Beatles room in my house.
Yeah. So. It's almost all I listen to. Every year on Spotify, I'm in the top 0.1% of people. They do that Spotify end of year review. And it's always like, it's kind of their way of telling you, hey, Mark, maybe you should do something else every once in a while. It's like, a little bit.
My daughter, who I just mentioned, is in pharmacy school now. She grew up, and all I ever listened to in a car is Beatles. She grew up, you know, in the backseat listening to the Beatles.
Yep.
And her friends, they freak out when a Beatles song comes on, and Aaron gets down and starts jamming and singing with the Beatles. They say, how do you know all of this?
Well, that, and, like, it's kind of cool. Like, my kids, too. My kids, they I think they like the Beatles. They probably have a love-hate relationship with the Beatles, to be fair. But, you know, sometimes you'll hear their music in a movie or in something. Like, you know, I think it was in a Disney movie not a few years back or whatever. And they're like, hey, I was like, I know. They're cool. Cool.
Well, good stuff.
Well, Bob, hey, thanks for jumping on, man. Okay. We'll put how to get a hold of Bob in the show notes if anybody wants to chat. Schedule some time to go see him if you can. And then really just appreciate you being on and what you're doing for pharmacy. I think everybody owes you
I'm
a big thank you.
I'm passionate about it. I enjoy doing what I'm doing. I love what we're doing now, so I just want to keep going.
Good stuff. Always get energy out of this. All right. Thanks, Bob. Bye, everybody.
All right. Thanks.